The Burrows of Berea is a conversational podcast.
We study the Bible and we talk about it.
Not all of us are of the same faith.
And one of us doesn't have a faith.
But we still love one another, and we're going to continue to talk about these things.
The things we believe in and the things we believe about what we read in the Bible. Not all of these are necessarily true. Some of it is opinion and speculation. Thank you for
listening and speculating with us.
There you go. That was good. Yes.
You are listening to the Burrows of Berea.
Well, welcome back to the Burrows of Berea. I'm Rick Welch, and to my left is Sarita. I'm just going to let you introduce yourself.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm the Edge Edgerton.
Well, why am I letting you introduce yourself today?
Well, I guess most people will know if they follow me on social media that I am running for South Carolina House District number 34 in Spartanburg County.
Bam!
Let the corruption begin.
We are solving politics right now.
This is how we infiltrate the government. Right here.
We've always known, like, she's the sweetest, because we had a conversation about it today, and she was like talking about being conservative. I was like, honestly, Sarita, you are the most conservative person that I know. It's true.
Yes,
it is a badge of honor.
I do.
Oh, she's aggressive with it.
She's packing. She's got it all going.
When my daughters came to me and said, both of them said, I wish I grew up in the 80s like you, Mom, because this world's terrible.
Yeah.
It wasn't good then either.
Yeah, it wasn't really good either.
I had a great time. It was awesome. News.
Well, we were kids.
Yeah.
You have to admit, though, I mean, the Highlander came out in the 80s, which was awesome.
Oh,
it was.
Goodness.
There's
for
only
sure.
One.
Kroll. Anybody remember Kroll?
Oh, my gosh. I love that movie.
I love it. Behind the glass is Rocket Man Andy Bishop.
Pacal.
That's right. And to my right, Big Daddy Carter.
Oh, yeah.
I think it gets like softer and deeper just a little bit every episode.
Well, our little fuzzy gummy bear is out in Vegas. Billy Eye Candy Kims, he's not here. He's in Vegas.
What?
Hey, what's out in Vegas? Stays in Vegas.
Apparently.
Will he sent me a message.
Will it?
Probably not.
That candy's going to be tainted.
Yep. And it will Cherry, come back again, this year, you know, she does that play.
She's the passion play?
She's in the passion play. She's doing this role again. And
is she Mary?
She plays Joanne.
Oh, Joanna, yeah.
Yeah, Joanna at the
The one who
tomb.
Runs to the tomb?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Who is...
She doesn't seem like a runner to me.
She is. No, she doesn't run from anything. She runs to you. Like, she runs after you. Anyway, so this testimony today was brought on by a post that you did, Sarita, when you were talking about... Well, tell us about it again.
I think we were doing... I was doing research for the fruit of the Spirit, and I was looking up love and the self-sacrificial agape love that Christ has for us, that he sacrificed, that he was our substitution on the cross. Mm-hmm. So I put on my Facebook post, is there anyone or do you know of anyone who willingly sacrificed themselves for someone else? It was something to that effect.
Yeah, I don't know if
it was
to be a hero. You used the word hero, I think.
As a hero, yes, that would have shown an agape type of love in human form.
Right.
I was hoping to use it in our Fruit of the Spirit podcast, which are probably almost all, at least the love one will be out. Yeah.
Yeah, they're out.
But I only had two people respond. And one was our guest today, and you, Rick.
Yes.
About it. And I didn't realize you and I both knew her, though I had never met her in person until just now. We had only been like Facebook friends, I guess we had mutual friends in common, and somehow we got to be friends. And so I was excited when we private messaged that she was going to come and share her story, because it was right about the time that we moved to Western North Carolina. So
yeah.
I heard it.
Yeah.
But I wasn't overly familiar with the story. I did go back and look it up. And,
yes.
And that kind
it was
of
a
thing.
It was a big thing in our community. It was huge.
It
was devastating. And so thank you, Tracy Hewitt, for being in the studio with us.
Thank you. Yay. Pleasure to be here.
Yeah. You and I have actually kind of, we know, we have friends, you know, and we've been around each other. And do you remember whenever you did a wedding?
Yes.
It was Sky's wedding.
Correct, yes.
At Biltmore. And you were the wedding planner.
That's correct.
And I was the videographer. And I came across, I was looking at my my pictures, and I was like, oh, wait a minute, because you were in the picture. And I was like, oh, yeah. I'd forgot about that. So we'd done that in the past. I don't video weddings anymore, but...
Do you video politicians?
I do, all the time.
You audio weddings. Yeah.
We can make you all kinds of cool social media stuff.
Yeah.
Heck yeah. So what are you going to... Like, what's the campaign? On the edge...
of destruction.
Yeah, yeah. I have to
the edge of the flat earth.
I have to get copyright data of that. Listen.
Across the flat earths of South Carolina.
I don't even live in the flatlands of South Carolina. I live in the upstate hills, but
that's too funny.
Sorry.
Well, so Tracy told me that
I was a sand lapper last week. I got to go to the beach.
A sand lapper. I did. I saw that. I saw a few pictures of you just sitting at the beach chilling. Yeah. Well, you know what? Before we get into this, there's one other thing you had told me. I don't know if you want to talk about it, but you had an idea of something that you were going to do with some of our work, right?
Yes. So while I was at the beach, there was a lot going on, me praying over being a politician.
Yeah.
And then I started writing a jackass devotional, I guess. the working title is Donkey Devo.
Donkey what?
Donkey Devo.
Donkey Devo for devotion? Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love it.
And so I'm doing some time statements as a devotional. I know that sounds weird. And doing some from the testimonials that we've had and using them as a devotional. And instead of having like talking points at the end, it's Bray number one and Bray number two. And
I've incorporated
cute little things and mentioning everybody on the podcast by name and making sure that I try to do it justice. There's just been a lot of really good information that people should sit and ponder and think that they might not listen to an hour and a half of us rambling on, but they might read a two-page excerpt about it.
Yeah, I love that idea. By now, when this episode releases, The Chosen, I don't know if it's going to be out on its app yet. They announced the delay, I did see all of the season four in the theater, and in the... This was so awesome. Whenever they're going to get the cult to be able to ride into the city, Matthew says, so we're going to borrow a burrow? And I laughed. I was like, hey. That was pretty cool. Anyway, so Tracy said she's listened to a few of our episodes. You've listened to some of these. So you know what's coming. So I'm just going to ask you right out of the gate. You ready?
I'm ready.
So to the best of your ability, can you tell me your earliest memory of when you heard the name Jesus Christ?
Well, I was fortunate to be born into a Christian home. And so I'm sure that before I was even born, you know, I had many prayers over me, you know, before I even came into the world. So growing up, you know, my parents were Christians, my grandparents, I mean, our whole family has been very fortunate, you know, a large family, lots of grandchildren, and we've been fortunate to see, you know, all of, you know, my aunts and uncles they all came to Christ. All of the first grandchildren have all come to Christ. Wow. You know, and now we're beginning to see our children come to Christ. So, you know, we're very fortunate to have that heritage.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that wasn't my upbringing.
Mine nope. either.
Nope.
Well, don't be fooled. Just because I started out on the right foot doesn't mean I stayed on the right foot.
So we have some juicy
details. Does
that mean
you went on the left foot?
We have. Yes, absolutely.
So tell me.
So I have juice. Yeah.
Yeah. You grew up. So you grew up in a Christian household. Obviously, nobody is born into being a Christian. You know, I've heard people say that God doesn't have any grandchildren. He only has children. And so tell me. Take me from growing up. When did you have this encounter with the Lord?
So, you know, of course, growing up, and my grandparents, I, you know, always went to church with them or with my parents. And
are you from this area?
I have, yes.
Always like Western North Carolina?
I am a native, which is not a real common thing these
not
days
anymore.
To run into too many natives here. So, yes, grew up here in the area. And so my grandparents, you know, my grandmother was, you know, this incredible singer. She had a beautiful voice. And my memories of her, you know, being at her house were her praising the Lord, you know, cleaning the house and singing and worshiping. And, you know, and that always had an impression on me. But of course, when you're a child, it's just going to church was memorizing a few verses to get a candy bar. it just...
It still works on me today.
Yeah. Works on my kids too.
So I think...
Jesus wept. Give me my Clark bar. Right?
No one knows when you memorize that little verse, how poignant that verse actually really is.
Oh, it's an amazing verse. Yes. Yeah, right.
So I don't think... I didn't, you know, really take it seriously. And I know that when I was about 12, you know, I started to come under conviction. Mm-hmm. And I grew up in Church of God. So... It was hardcore.
So tell me what. Know. So what makes it hardcore? I really want to know around here. What is the Church of God like in comparison to like a Baptist?
Oh wow. So and I am so fortunate to have those roots.
Of course,
and it's still a very important part of my life. But I mean, you know, we're talking the old ladies with the beehives, and you weren't supposed to wear pants if you're a female, and you didn't wear makeup, and you didn't cut your hair, and our family wasn't as. We weren't that
dogmatic.
Serious. Dogmatic. We didn't follow all those rules.
Yeah.
And so I know when I was like 12, and I remember at a service one night, and I went to the altar, and a lady at the church came over to me because she's, you know, I'm down there praying, and she pulls my hair back, and she says, "Well, you're never going to get saved with those earrings." And
wow.
I was just, oh yeah. So, and I know that she meant that in the best possible way coming from her and her upbringing, but it really devastated me. And so I
don't mean to laugh. It's so erroneous and I can't understand it. It's like, why? Cause like, is it like blocking the sound waves that are going to heaven? Like what's happening?
Well, and you know,
Holy Spirit is thwarted by your earrings.
Does she think that maybe ears go to heaven with the spirit? Is that it?
It's so wild. No jewelry, bro. None. Zero.
Right. I mean,
do not adorn the body.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And so obviously don't look at my earrings or my tattoo or my, you know, any of those things I have right now. Oh, they would be, you know, just.
Old Covenant earrings and stuff made an idol.
Yeah.
That's true.
That's fine.
So I was taken back by that. And
it's just an interesting time. I mean, you're in this little place, right, where you're vulnerable and you're ready to know the Lord. And then somebody comes up in the church.
Right.
Was your family there when this happened?
They were.
Did they agree with her?
Well, they didn't. I told them after, you know, after the service was over and all that. It really bothered me.
Because she might have got slain in the spirit. You know what I mean? Like, ugh.
Yeah. And so, and of course, my, you know, immediate family, they were like, no, that's not going to stop you from receiving salvation. And so, that took me back for a little bit. And then, but we had this wonderful little country preacher, Brother McDonald, and he was the most compassionate man. I mean, he really loved you to Christ. Mm-hmm. He didn't mind preaching the gospel and telling you what God's word said, but he loved you to Christ. Mm-hmm. And so he had come by the house one day and I said, "Preacher," I said, "tell me, you know, what is your take on, you know, wearing makeup and jewelry?" And he said, "Well, you know," he said, "I think any old barn looks a little better with a coat of paint." And it was great.
That's awesome.
Oh, country preachers are so good.
Yeah, that's
funny.
So that made me feel better. And there wasn't that judgment there. He really encouraged me. So it was a few years later. I was, I think, 16 when I was saved. And I was actually baptized in my best friend's swimming pool.
Oh, yeah, really?
Yeah, great memory. So I was saved fairly young, but I didn't stay on the path that I should have. Mm-hmm. So moving forward, I think I was 20 when I got married for the first time. Mm-hmm. The man I married was fresh in his Christian life and was pretty quickly, you know, called into the ministry. Mm-hmm. And so we found ourselves, you know, we got married, and then a year after we got married, we had our son, and he goes into the ministry, becomes a pastor. You know, so a lot of things all happened at once. Mm-hmm. So yeah. I kind of went from my mom and dad taking care of me to a husband taking care of me.
Okay.
And so it was a lot of responsibility. I had just become a new wife and a new mother and a preacher's wife and then a pastor's wife. And it was quite overwhelming. So, and then,
and
you know.
How old were you when you became a pastor?
I was.
Or how old was he?
I was 20. He was like 25.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So, you know, we were kids.
That's young. That's young.
And so.
Brain's still a little spongy at that point for a lot of people.
Right. Yeah.
Well, right. You know, they say that the brain doesn't fully develop until like the age 25. And
Somewhere in there. Of course, it depends on the person. Some people much later, some people never hit that last stage of development.
We're working towards 50 and I still haven't quite got it.
I totally can relate, you know. So it was overwhelming for me. You know, and you would have disagreements in the church, and I would have some of the ladies call, and so-and-so did this. You know, I started having this gossiping that would come into play, and I found myself sometimes caught up in the middle of that.
Yeah.
And so I began to feel like I had missed out on something, mm-hmm. that I had missed my youth. And my friends are going out to the bars and having a great time. And I can remember being up at night and up with my son, mm-hmm. and when he was an infant, and my friends were going by that 3 o'clock in the morning and blowing the horn when they would drive by because they were on their way home from the bar.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, man, I've missed it. I missed all the fun and all the great things. So definitely brought issues into the marriage, mm-hmm. because at the time, you know, he was very absorbed into the ministry and focused on that, and I wasn't there. Mm-hmm. And so I chose to leave the marriage, and it was a hard time. There was a lot of bitterness. And so to say it was an ugly divorce would be an understatement.
Yeah. There's a lot that comes with it, especially in church life, especially with a pastor. So now you've got like a whole congregation, and you've got people, and you've got other pastors. I can only imagine how many people reached out to you about trying to save the ministry. And am I wrong?
No,
I mean,
you're not wrong.
That becomes the thing. You know what I mean?
Right. And because I was the one who chose to end the marriage, all that judgment came on me. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying all of it was unjust. I'm not saying that at all. It took two to tango, as they say.
Yeah.
But I wanted to explore that life that I felt like I missed out on.
Yeah.
Going to the bars and hanging out with my friends, that experiencing that life. And so as a result, we had a horrible custody battle. And ultimately, I lost custody of my son. And I was devastated. I mean, I was just completely broken. And couldn't understand why God would allow that to happen to me. Because I was doing things I shouldn't do. But as far as I was a good mother, and I'm thinking, you know, how could God allow this to happen to me? I had not been a bad mother. And legally speaking, there were not really grounds for me to have lost custody. And I know that, and I have to be honest and say, when I hear of a woman losing custody of their child, I automatically think the worst. Mm-hmm. You know, like, what could this woman have done to lose her child? And I didn't see it at the time, but, you know, God has a way of, I'm not saying God did that to me, but God allowed that to happen. Mm-hmm. So I went through my little time of going to the bars, you know, doing a little bit of partying, never did drugs or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But not what I should have done. And so
your own personal Rumspringa.
Yeah. So God started dealing with me again. And so I wanted my family back. So I started praying and really seeking God, you know, to restore my family. So I went to a church one night, and the preacher was a friend, and you know, I lost every Christian friend I had. When I went through that.
Yeah.
So I went to the church, and a friend of mine that was the pastor, I went to the altar and was praying, and he came over to me and he said, God told me to tell you to stop praying. And again,
he didn't like your earrings.
Ouch.
And that is exactly what that took me back to.
I know, it's like every time you try to reach out to God when you're sincere, somebody comes up. Isn't that bizarre?
Right, right. And it's just Satan's little way of driving that wedge, because he doesn't want restoration. He doesn't.
Bizarre.
So yeah, but it took me back to that same hurt that I experienced as a child. I'm not good enough to reach the throne. So I backed off again. And sometime later, a friend of mine, she's like, I want to introduce you to somebody.
Are you tired of compromising when it comes to protecting your valuable firearms? Then let us tell you about Carolina Cases, your ultimate destination for hard plastic, impact-proof pistol cases. Carolina Cases are TSA approved and are crafted with high-quality foam, ensuring maximum protection for your firearms during transport or storage. At Carolina Cases, they understand the importance of safeguarding your investments. Carolina Cases provide unparalleled durability, keeping your pistol safe from impact and damage. So hop over to www.carolinacases.net to explore their wide range of pistol cases designed to meet your specific needs. Don't settle for less. With Carolina Cases, you can ensure your firearms are safely stored, preserve your peace of mind, and protect what matters most. Enter code Burrows. That's B-U-R-R-O-S, at checkout to receive free shipping.
I was like, I don't want to meet anybody.
Yeah. Is he a Christian? No thanks.
No interest at all.
Right.
None. And so she's like, no, you know, well, she's like, you know, he's a great guy, but she's like, he's in law enforcement. I said, absolutely not.
Hmm.
Definitely not. And he was working secondary employment at Dillard's. She was working there as well. And she's like, just come and meet him. And I said, okay, I'll come and meet him. I said, but you need to let him know right now. I don't want anything serious. I don't want him calling me all the time. We can go hang out once in a while. That's as far as this is going to go.
Set up them boundaries, girl.
Yeah.
That's right.
So she called, you know, she's like, he said the same thing. He's going through a divorce, doesn't want anything serious. Okay, great. So I go to meet him, and his name was Jeff Hewitt, and there was this instant connection, you know. And so he was working that day. He had to leave and go back to work. So he's like, can I call you? And I said, sure. So I think he called me like
so he was working and he was working it.
Oh,
oh, work it,
work it. Work it.
On it.
Yeah, so
everybody can hear Ralph now. He finally made it to the studio. Welcome, Ralph.
Represent.
So I think Jeff called me 13 times that day.
Oh, that guy you told you didn't want people calling all the time?
Oh, and you answered every time.
And suddenly it was fine.
Yes.
You know, suddenly it was fine.
That's awesome.
And her friend's going, I told you
Yes.
So so that was it. We were together, you know, from that moment on.
Mm-hmm.
And he was not a Christian, but a wonderful, kind man.
Mm-hmm.
So we still are having major, major issues with the previous marriage.
Mm-hmm.
It was so volatile and complete turmoil. And my son's just wrapped up.
Both, not that it matters, but just
mine. Yours. It was just mine. He actually, you know, was not in contact with his ex. And so it was all me and my baggage that I was bringing in. I'll call it. And so he, you know, had a great relationship with my son right away. Just such a kind, generous person. The fighting continued with me and my first husband. And I was just, you know, continued to be just spiritually broken because of that loss.
Can I ask you a question? I'm sorry.
Sure.
I'm just curious about this because... Mm-hmm. So is this problem with your ex due to like a desire for reconciliation on his side?
I don't know.
Because I was just curious really, how much like sometimes I've seen, especially like when it's pastoral.
Right.
Then you know, he would have a lot of pressure on him about if you want like for him, for example, if he's in the Baptist faith, it's going to be impossible for him to go on being a pastor. He'll never be able to remarry.
Unless your name is Dr. Charles Stanley.
He never remarried. He never remarried.
No?
No, he never did. But some Baptist churches will allow it. But I would say the majority of them won't. But my point is that other pastors that are, you know, because pastors talk to other pastors, you know, and they do. I just wonder if maybe he had that on his side that was pushing him for that. And I don't know if he was reconciling, but he was just dealing with.
Well, I could see that with you, Rick. I'm with you on that same page.
Yeah.
And that definitely probably, you know, it could have been a factor. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, when I was trying to reconcile, it wasn't an option for him. But I know that he was still experiencing a lot of hurt. At the time that he was dealing with, he did receive a lot of pressure from the church. Yeah. And when he did try to move on with his life, he was under all this judgment and ultimately, you know, was asked to leave the church. Mm-hmm. I won't say he was asked to leave, but he got a lot of pressure about it and made that
realized
made
that the best choice. Thing that he could do for the whole group was just to exit.
Exactly.
Which is unfortunate, which makes it even harder, really. Because now you have to overcome that, and you're good luck. You know, that's tough.
I could see where he would be. Mm-hmm. He might blame that on you.
Sure. Yeah.
Not that I in any way, shape, or form think that you deserve that. But.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, and I do. I take ownership of that because—
You're allowed to go be happy. Don't apologize for that.
I know.
And maybe the first thing you did wasn't the right thing for you, but that doesn't mean that the separation was not the right thing for you. You're allowed to go be happy.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
So it's not your fault.
Yes.
Some things are, I'm sure, but not that one.
Yeah.
Right. So one evening, Jeff came home from work and I was at the end of my rope. I mean, I contemplated suicide.
Wow.
I just could not live another moment without my son. Mm-hmm. So Jeff came home one night.
Did you ask him to have him arrested?
Oh, wow. Just trying to work that in there. Just
oops. My brain went there. Sorry.
I just didn't ask it.
I just want to know if that in any way foreshadows Serena's political. Just saying.
No, I don't have my political opponents arrested.
So one night, I said this particular night, he came home and I was like, I can't do this anymore. I can't fight anymore. I have no fight left in me. And I said, I'm tearing my son's world apart with a constant back and forth with his father was just not healthy for him. I was like, I'm just going to give up. And I'm going to just let him have custody because I can't watch what this is doing to my son anymore. Mm-hmm. And he was like, you're not giving up. You're not going to do it. And so my brother was going to church actively. And he was like, you know, I want you to come to church. We're having a revival and this preacher's going to be there. And I was like, okay, you know, I'll go. So I go to this revival and the preacher that was coming that night, it was the first night and he got stuck in traffic and was late. So he came straight in and I mean, he goes straight to the pulpit. Doesn't know anything about me, doesn't know who I am. And so at the end of the service, they had an altar call and a number of people are at the altar praying and I'm sitting there because I'm not on board with God right now.
Right.
And
you weren't going to the altar for that third time for somebody to tell you to stop, right?
I know. It's like, what is it, my hair now?
Yeah,
whatever it could be.
Right. So I'm sitting there and he points me out. He was like, you. He said, God has told me that the devil took something from you. And he's like, God's going to restore it to you. And boy, I received that and believed that, you know, with my whole heart. So
when you have those moments, you have some people that come up to you, God told me. It always drives me nuts because it's like, you know what? God can talk to me.
Yeah.
He can, like, oh, so he's going to go through you like you're the filter. But this one, when you heard that, that was an encouragement and you took
yes,
it.
Yes.
So, I mean, I get, like, I totally get that. I think that that's a wonderful thing because now you're going to go from here like, okay, I think that I'm going to get restored.
And I think had God even tried to talk to me at that moment, so I was so another, shut down yeah. mm-hmm. at that moment. He had to send someone else to speak to me
sure.
on his behalf.
And he uses his people. He does. It's sure. not that. It's just
yeah.
it's a lot, you know, these other people are like, God told me to tell you not to pray. I'm pretty sure that wasn't God.
Right.
Because, yeah, well, that's like that scene from that movie where the guy says, well, excuse me, but I talk to God all the time and he never mentioned you.
Right. You know, so I'm, you know, I really held on to that promise. And he was like, you know, he said, for some reason, you know, I'm thinking 30 days. God's telling me 30 days. Mm. So there was another big fight about, I don't even know what at this point, probably the most menial thing ever. But Jeff happened to be home. I put him on the phone. You know, I just handed him the phone, and he gets on the phone with my ex. They talk for a few minutes, and they decide they're going to meet over at the lake and talk. And I'm like, oh, this is going to be bad, you know. Mm-hmm. And so they are gone for hours. And I'm like, they have just probably unalived each other, I think is what we're supposed to say.
Somebody's in the lake.
politically correct,
yes,
unalived.
Unalived, yeah.
And so finally Jeff comes home and I'm like, what the heck? And so he said at first, you know, it was started out trying to be a heated conversation. And he said, just do me a favor. He said, just say the word peace. And my ex said, peace. And he said, it's that easy. He said, it is that easy for you and Tracy to get along mm. and be effective co-parents. And just, he's like, your life didn't work out together, but you can still be productive in the life of your son. And he mm-hmm. was like, it's that easy to just say peace. Mm. So this complete turnaround happens. And my son comes to live with me. And I mean.
Was it within 30 days?
I'm pretty sure it was very close to that.
Wow.
It was probably a little bit longer, but very, very close to that. Mm. So my son came to live with me. We became we were able to effectively co-parent. Now, it wasn't perfect. We still had arguments that came up. But, I mean, it was nothing compared to what it had been. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was a miracle. And so they started hunting together, him and my ex-brother-in-law were hunting together. You know, it just was a complete 180.
So Jeff was a very peaceful, kind, overlook things and just make the best of a situation.
Well, you know, they say law enforcement, they call them the peacemakers, and that is exactly what he was. Hmm. So as I said, Jeff, you know, was not a Christian. So at this point, you know, I'm back in church and I'm singing in a group and I'm all in. And I'd gone one night to see the movie, The Passion of the Christ, mm. had come out. So I went with a group of friends to see that movie. And when I came home, I told him, I said, are you not afraid of what's going to happen to you when you die? Because no, you know, you can be a great person all you want, and you can do great things for people, but that's not the way to salvation. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, I told him, I was like, are you not afraid of what's going to happen to you? And he kind of brushed it off and was like, don't worry about it. It's fine. And so we rented this movie, and normally Jeff would fall asleep because he worked all the time, you know, yeah. all this secondary employment. So I would end up, you know, staying up watching movies. This particular night, I fell asleep. He stayed up and watched this movie. And I think the movie was called The Book of Days, a very low, you know, B-rate movie.
Yeah.
But he was very touched by that movie. Mm. And, you know, he was telling me, very excited telling me all about it. He's like, you know, you really need to watch that. You need to see this movie. And so I started to see little changes in him. He would say a cuss word, and then he would be like, shoot, I shouldn't have said that. Mm. You know, and I'm like, And then he poured the beer out, and there was no more beer in the house. And I'm like, okay, this is different, you know, but I still didn't say anything. And so we're asleep one night, and he wakes me up and he is in a panic, sweat just drenched. He's like, I had a dream that someone was shooting at me. And he said, I could feel the bullets going past me. And I'm like, it's okay. You know, it was just a dream. You're fine. It was just a dream. And so maybe a week later, 2 weeks later, he comes to me and he was like, I just want you to know you don't have to worry about what's going to happen to me. He said, I made things right. And he says, so you don't ever have to worry about where I'm going. And so 2 weeks later, it's midnight. And I get it. Jeff had gone to work. He'd called me that day and he said that he was going to have to go file or serve commitment papers on a suspect and a domestic issue. And so he says, I've, you know, got to go. And actually, we were getting ready to have our third anniversary. And so he was supposed to have been off work that day, but went in to get comp time to use towards our vacation, you know, go for our anniversary. And so he had called me, told me that he was going to go serve those papers and that he would be home after that. So around midnight, I get a knock on the door. I jump up. My first instinct, I looked out the window in the bedroom, and there's blue lights everywhere. My first thought is they're chasing somebody over here, and they're stopping by to tell me to make sure I have everything locked up or to make sure I'm okay. And so I go to the door, and there is his best friend, Ralph Sexton Jr. is there.
That's the pastor of Trinity Baptist Church.
Correct. Yeah. Uh-huh. Correct. And he was serving as a chaplain at the time with the sheriff's department. There's a couple other people. I think Rick Cummings, a few other people that I recall. So Mark, his best friend, steps in the door. And at this time, you know, I pick up the phone and immediately call Jeff as I'm going to the door.
Right.
And it's just ringing, ringing, ringing. I get to the door, open the door, and these people are at my door, and I still don't get it. And I'm like, what's going on? What's happened? Because it's just not registering at all, because this doesn't happen. You know, you hear of it happening, it doesn't happen to us. Mark comes in and he says, Jeff's been shot. And again, still doesn't register. And I'm like, where is he? You know, where is he at? And they all just are frozen looking at me because they don't know what to say.
Yeah, nobody wants to finish the sentence.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, it'd be easy if they're saying he's in the hospital.
Right.
Correct.
Right.
Correct. And that was my first thought, you know, is what hospital? Where is he? When they just froze and said nothing, then I finally realized what happened. And so progressing through the evening, we found out that it was actually, so what had happened is they went to serve this domestic warrant, you know, for involuntary commitment. And when they got to the property, this guy had bamboo growing all around the perimeter of the property, so you couldn't see in. There was a fence there, a gate. Jeff was there with three other deputies that were there with him. He was a sergeant on patrol. He climbed the fence first to go address this guy. Well, when he gets across the fence, the guy's hiding in the bushes, and he steps out, you know, draws his weapon on Jeff. And they said that Jeff, being the kind person he is, he said, buddy, you know, put the gun down. And the guy immediately fires on Jeff. And so gunfire was exchanged. Jeff was killed instantly. There was some gunfire exchanged. And ultimately, this guy took his own life that night. So everybody's at my house. And my brother had been in law enforcement as well. He's at the house, and then we can hear, you know, the radios, the deputies that are there, we hear their radios, and they're talking about the address of where this occurred. And my brother says, I think I know who that is. And it ended up being my brother's high school girlfriend. It was her father that killed him. So, and we had known that he had been mentally disturbed. You know, there had been some mental illness, I should say, that had affected, you know, their family. And their daughter had actually lived with us for a period of time because, you know, her home life was so bad. So it was crazy how that all just kind of came full circle. You know, so when we were at the funeral, people were coming through, and people that he had arrested, they were like, you know, he changed my life. Hmm. He did his job. He did what he had to do, and he arrested me, took me to jail. But he changed my life because he treated me with respect. Hmm. It meant so much to know that he maintained that kind of personality on the job, because I know there's a lot of law enforcement out there who they're one person at home and to their friends, but when they get that uniform on, and, you know, it can change you and how you treat people. But to know that, you know, he was a man of honor. Mm-hmm. And he brought honor to that badge.
Are you tired of compromising when it comes to protecting your valuable firearms? Then let us tell you about Carolina Cases, your ultimate destination for hard plastic, impact-proof pistol cases. Carolina Cases are TSA approved and are crafted with high-quality foam, ensuring maximum protection for your firearms during transport or storage. At Carolina Cases, they understand the importance of safeguarding your investments. Carolina Cases provide unparalleled durability, keeping your pistol safe from impact and damage. So hop on over to www.carolinacases.net to explore their wide range of pistol cases designed to meet your specific needs. Don't settle for less. With Carolina Cases, you can ensure your firearms are safely stored, preserve your peace of mind, and protect what matters most. Enter code BUROWS at checkout to receive free shipping.
I remember talk around about Jeff, and that's always the question that comes up when something tragic happens. You know, you're like, why the good guys? Like, what is up? Like, that he's such a kind man, and he's a sweet man, and he's a family man, and he's a caring man, and he goes to the nth degree with people. Why that guy? That's the hardest questions. I remember people saying that about your husband. I remember that. And what year was that again?
Oh, well, interesting thing there too is it was April 4th, 2004.
Wow.
And
so this is going to be 20 years.
It will. So it didn't occur to me until we were at the funeral, and one of the chaplains that was talking at the funeral, and he was like, 04, 04, 04. Mm. You know, in reading, there had to be some significance to that day in my mind. You know, I've explored that number biblically, and it's a number that represents completion. And I feel that people ask me, you know, weren't you bitter at God, or how were you not angry because he took Jeff? I said I couldn't be angry because now I shouldn't say I couldn't be angry. I did have some anger.
Yeah.
But not towards God. Mm-hmm. I think I took it out on some people that I was close to on occasions, but I never took it out on God, because I feel like God placed Jeff in my life for a very specific purpose, and he played a vital role in me getting my son back and bringing peace to that relationship. And I mean, you know, that family, they had all respect for Jeff. I mean, they fell in love with him. I mean, everybody that really knew him loved him. So, you know, it was a devastating moment in our lives, but God really gave me peace. And knowing that Jeff was saved just a couple of weeks before this all happened, and the steps that God took to speak to him and to reach him.
He wasn't just there for you. You were there for him.
Yes.
You helped complete him and get him ready.
Yes. Yeah.
And if he was the man of peace before he got saved, then when he had the Prince of Peace, he was perfected.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
As close as he could get human-wise.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
And what's shocking to me was that, you know, the dream that he had.
Right.
And then also to tell you that he's going to be okay and all that. It's almost like a, what do they call them, premonitions, almost like you can see.
Right. You know, that happened to my dad. He was a truck driver, and one of his last trips was to Meridian, Mississippi, and he woke up in the middle of the night crying and sweating and shaking, and he said, I hit somebody head on and killed them. And not more than a week later, somebody crossed the line. He didn't cross. Mm-hmm. They crossed and hit him head on, and somebody in the car passed. And he just hardly, and he was at the end of his trucking career, but he hardly got over that. I mean, that was so tough, but to have lived it, and then he lived it twice.
Right.
You know.
And you lived it twice.
And you've lived it twice.
And I think God uses, you know, situations, you know, to reach people. And I mean, it may be that, you know, one person receives it through a sermon and another person, their heart softened through a song. Mm-hmm. God reached Jeff through a dream. I am so thankful that I had that conversation with him.
Mm. How's your son with all of this? Because I can imagine having somebody like this come into his life at a time of upheaval must have been a healing force for him, and then to have that disappear. How did he handle all that?
It was really hard, and we experienced a lot of trauma during that same time. He had a friend from high school. Well, actually, they were in elementary school. She lived in Nebo, and I don't know if you remember this, but her mom had met a guy, and they had moved to Nebo, and so she had left school. Mm-hmm. And she had called Taylor and said that she was coming back to school, that her mom and this guy were, you know, splitting up. And the guy actually ended up shooting her.
I remember that.
And he shot his own daughter. Mm-hmm. And then my son's friend and her mother were all killed. So he had so much grief at one time. It was really hard on him.
How is he today, and how is his faith?
He's great. He's great, but we're struggling. You know, he has a hard time with his faith, and he's not quite there yet. And I just put him in God's hands and believe that God's going to bring him in, just like
he's got that strong legacy that you mentioned at the very beginning.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes. And, you know, my grandmother's prayers, they've covered all of us so far. And, you know, and I'm just believing and trusting in God that he'll keep him as well.
Well, and you just love and love and love that young man. He's the sweetest young man you'll ever meet.
Yeah.
Yeah. He really is. So you're about to hit your 20-year anniversary of this.
Yes.
And I'm just curious. So it's been over 20 years. And like would you have told the story, you think, 18 years ago the way that you told it tonight? Or do you think that your heart has just gotten, not hard, but you know what I mean? Like you've just gotten used to what it was and you've probably talked about it a lot. Or do you feel like you're pretty much the same as you were back then?
No, I mean, I would talk about it and cry, yeah. You know, it was just an instant emotion that would come when I would talk about him. Mm-hmm. But now, you know, there's been a lot of time for healing and, you know, they say that time, you know, time heals. Well, time changes your grief. Mm-hmm. Your grief never goes away. Yeah. It evolves. And I know that, you know, I would cycle through all the stages of grief. I would be angry. And then I would be sad, and I would be lonely, and I would be okay for a while, and then I would be overcome with grief again. Mm-hmm. So, and I mean, there's times I'll, you know, be in the grocery store and see something that he always liked to eat, or mm-hmm. seeing things change around the area that I wish he knew about.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things I'm glad he doesn't know about, you know, with some of the things that are going on with our community and the way, you know, law enforcement are looked on now.
Yeah.
But there's, you know, it's been a lot of time to heal.
Sure. So how about your faith? So you said, like you said, you didn't blame God, you were angry about things, but is there anything that you've taken from that experience that you carry with you now that still very ever present in you?
Sure. I think that experience completely changed who it's a great part of who I am today. Mm-hmm. And I think that it actually made me stronger. And at first it didn't, but I think over time, being able to look back and see how Jeff was strategically placed into my life at a time when I didn't even want him there.
Mm-hmm.
But God saw something that I didn't see.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And so.
When you didn't want calls and he called you 13 times and you answered every time.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
That's pretty remarkable.
Oh, so knowing that God has him now,
mm-hmm.
and seeing the changes that occurred in him and seeing the peace that he brought to my life and hearing the wonderful stories about him, you know, mm-hmm. that people tell me. It's a blessing in a way mm-hmm. that I still have those memories.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I grieve him all the time. You know, I'll never get to a place where I don't want him here.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, I've been able to laugh again and
how long did that take?
It took a long time.
Yeah.
And I remember even when I eventually started dating again.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, you probably felt.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
guilty and all those other things.
Oh, guilty.
Anybody measure up?
It wasn't a matter of me thinking people didn't measure up, but a lot of people I dated, I think, felt a little intimidated,
mm-hmm.
If that's the right word.
Probably.
Inadequate.
Mm-hmm. Because you've got this guy who's been named a hero, and everybody respected him. And to have died the way he did and received the recognition that he has, and because, you know, him going in first, you know, and approaching that subject first, that saved the lives of the guys that were with him, mm-hmm. you know, and
it's just hard for other people to measure up. Probably they think,
well, in their minds,
right.
In their minds,
not yours, but theirs.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
It's hard for some people if I still talk about Jeff, I think any of us we want to be remembered.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to just be forgotten when we leave this world. So it's important to me to still, and I'll say that, you know, like I said, it's evolved,
mm-hmm.
and it's been 20 years. On one hand, it's still very fresh to me, and still painful and hurtful and sad to not have him here.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you know, God has brought healing, and I am able to laugh.
Yeah.
And it's so important for people to know that go through any kind of loss like that. You know, at first you do feel guilty for laughing because Jeff's not here to laugh.
Mm-hmm.
When I remember I didn't eat for days and I see people eating and I'm thinking, how can you sit here and eat, you know?
Yeah.
My husband is dead. How can you?
Or every time an anniversary hit.
How does the world keep spinning?
Right, right.
And your world is stopped completely.
Yes.
Yeah, because I was thinking about when you said that he was doing some comp time.
Mm-hmm.
So that you could have time for your anniversary.
Right.
So then that's why he went. And then because, you know, so anniversaries come around and does that pop in your mind and things like that hit your mind?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
His birthday's on the 20th of this month. And then the anniversary will be on the 4th of April. And I'll never stop remembering him.
Right.
And I still get comments from people, you know, they're like, it's been 20 years.
Yeah.
When are you going to let that?
Ooh.
When are you going to let it rest?
What an ugly comment.
It is an ugly comment. But at the same time, I don't think these people have experienced a loss like I have.
Mm-hmm.
And it's such the.
And it doesn't really matter, just so you know. It's you are going, you're the captain of your own life.
Correct.
So you're going to handle it whichever way. When other people try to tell you what to do, it's just. It's so irritating.
I give him the finger in my mind.
I give him the finger with my finger.
And we all do. We all grieve in different ways. Yeah. And I mean, you know, we all grieve in different ways. And I came to realize that I could stay held up in my house for the rest of my life and not speak to anyone and wear a black dress forever or something. And people would say, oh, my gosh. You know, she lost her mind. She never, you know, never recovered from that. But then at the same time, there are other people who, when I have gone on with my life, that are like, how could she go on with her life?
Yeah, of course. You know? Yeah, of course.
How could she do that? So, you know, I had to come to terms with that on my own and decide that I had to make myself happy and do what made me happy.
Right.
And so that's what I chose to do.
Well, it's a good example for your son, too.
Yep.
So that he can get where he needed to get.
Especially with everything he's went through.
Yes. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. Well, that brings us to our final question. So, when you take your last breath here on Earth, where do you go? What happens?
So, I am a person, you know, I'm always, in a way, challenging God. You know, I'm like, show me. You know, give me a sign. Show me.
Yeah.
My friends, you know, joke with me and they're like, be careful what you ask for, you know, because God always comes through for me. Mm. I'll ask for a sign and I'll get it. It may be kind of in your face, but I get it. Mm-hmm. So after Jeff died, you know, I was like, God, just give me a sign. Let me know. I know he's with you, but give me a sign. Let me know for sure. So I had a dream one night and Jeff had been in military. He was in Marine Corps. In this dream, he had been sent on some military mission and they were going to let me talk to him like on a military radio. And they said, you know, you cannot ask him any details about where he's at or anything or what he's doing, but you can talk to him. So he comes on the radio and he's like, hey, beautiful. I was like, hey, I was like, are you okay? Are you warm? Because it was really cold when he died. I said, are you warm? Do you have everything you need? And he said, I have everything I could possibly want for. And he said, it's so beautiful here. Mm. He said, but I miss you. And he said, but I never want to come back.
In your dream?
Yes.
Wow.
So, and I think I had always had this vision in my mind that everything had to be so, you know, it's even learning to pray. I thought everything had to be so formal, you know, with God, dear Heavenly Father, you know.
Yeah.
And.
Oh, Lion of the tribe of Judah.
A theologian.
Yeah. I've met those Jireh. Guys.
Theologian prayer. Hey, there's one at your church.
Hey, bro, what's happening?
You know.
What's up, Jesus?
And that's one thing I've come to realize in my relationship with him is it's just like my relationship with you or any of my friends. I don't have to be anything that I'm not. He made me and he knows who I am and right. He knows how I talk and he knows my expression. And so I don't have to make some formal request to him. And I think that I think when I take my last breath, it's going to be, I'm just going to be able to meet him face to face and thank him for all that he's done for me. But I think it's, you know, in my mind, I have always imagined like, oh, it's going to be so formal and we're going to be worshiping God. And that's kind of it.
Yeah.
But you know, having that vision from Jeff, I just think it's going to be such a beautiful experience and to lay down all the weight of this world and all the pain that, yeah, there's been great moments in my life. And I have to say, I've been more blessed than defeated.
Yeah.
But I just can't wait to see the loved ones that have gone before, to see my grandmother and all these people that I love.
Yeah.
And just to see, you know.
You think they're having a conversation? Whoo, let me tell you about that girl of yours.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure.
I think that's a great answer. You just can't wait. I love it. It reminds me of something that the Apostle Paul says.
But the great theologian, Tom Petty, says the waiting is the hardest part.
Yeah, yeah.
No, he's not waiting anymore.
No, he's not, but the rest of us still are.
Well, I can't remember where it is. I think it's in 1 Corinthians 5. No, it's not. It's about sexual morality.
No.
That has nothing to do with what we're talking about. So,
we know where your mind is.
Completely at your risk.
I was studying that this morning.
Sexual morality or about sexual?
The thing that comes to mind is whenever Paul talks about, he said, I knew a man who 14 years ago who went into the third heaven.
That was an ex.
No, it's not. It's in 1 or 2 Corinthians. It's in the letter. Yeah, look it up. Look it up for me. He's talking about boasting, and he says, you know, all the things that I've done. I've been I'm a Pharisee of Pharisees. I've done everything right, and I consider it just dung. But he said, if I wanted to talk about boasting, I knew a man who got to go into the third heaven, and the things that he saw, he couldn't even utter. He just didn't want to come back. And so it's like, when you said that he didn't want to come back, I was like, that's third heaven talk. What you got?
2 Corinthians 12:2.
Yeah, that's it. 2 Corinthians 12.
Paul was of the, there were several different levels of the Pharisees where they believed in the third heaven. Some believed in the 10th heaven. And that's where all dogs go to heaven, comes in there.
Except for the one on the Nintendo game.
Yeah, yeah.
That one didn't make it.
That level didn't make it?
No. I don't know if you remember playing the little Nintendo game where you shoot the ducks.
Oh,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Little duck, yeah. Little doggy would come up and laugh at you when you failed.
Oh, that one didn't make it?
Yeah, yeah. That little dog didn't make it. Bam,
bam, bam. Well, Tracy, it means a lot to me that you came out here.
Thank you.
And thank you for answering my Facebook post. Yeah. You're the only one.
Yeah, I'm honored to. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, be not mistaken. I have a long way to go, but faith is not a problem, not one thing I have a problem with, but my relationship with Christ is always, I think we always have room to grow, and perfect I am not, but through him.
Yeah.
And another thing, Lord.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, it means a lot to me that you came on, and that's the first time I've heard the story straight from your mouth. I've heard the story numerous times from everybody else, but never
meanwhile,
from
I've cried all my makeup off.
She has.
Over
she's been ugly crying over there.
Oh, I've been ugly crying.
Okay, you've been beautiful crying
Oprah.
Over there. You've been beautiful crying. Andy has been playing with his cat.
And listening.
Listening, yeah.
That's the that live is not studio a euphemism.
Anyway, well, thank you for being here, Tracy.
Thank you. Thank you all so
that
much.
That was an amazing story. Absolutely. Thank you for sharing.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, Sarita is going to be stumping very soon in a town near you in South Carolina.
By the time this comes out, I'm probably going to be in the midst of it.
Yep. We're going to be taking donations from anywhere from $5 to up to $1,000 for her campaign. Bam!
Boom.
And Andy, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Rick.
You don't have a choice. Thank you.
He always says
actually,
that.
You do. You could be like, sure. I don't want you anymore, Rick. Ralph.
Represent.
Good to see you. Rick, thanks for driving up. All right. And we will talk to you guys again next time on the Burrows of Berea. Peace out.
Bye, y'all.
Later.
Hey, guys. This is Rick from the Burrows of Berea. Do you know how much blood, sweat, and tears it takes to make a podcast? None. But that doesn't mean that it doesn't cost a lot. And so if you guys don't mind, if anybody would like to give to help us with these episodes, it would be great. We'll put out even more content. And if you go to our Patreon page, just search for the Burrows of Berea, you'll get extra notes, extra episodes, and it's pretty much free. $1 gets you a lot. Thanks, guys.